Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare. All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up. Hi.
Hi.
Yay. Erin and I are across the ocean from each other.
Yeah, again.
Again. Oh, my God. And here we are embarking. That's a little sailing joke. Embarking upon a new play.
Yeah, Measure for Measure, which is one of Hemel Bloom's favorite plays.
Yes. Erin has been reading up on it and will fill you all in. It will be marvelous. And it comes really interestingly on the heels of Lear. It's going to expand upon some of the themes which we touched upon.
Yeah, this is, so here we go. Bloom says this was Shakespeare's adios to comedy. He was like, I've done everything I can do with comedy, and this is the death of it. This is the killing and death.
I'm so done.
And he went on right after this to write three of his most vicious tragedies, right?
Lear, Othello, Macbeth.
Yeah, he was in some kind of weird headspace at this point. He was dark. He was in a dark period.
In a dark place. I think there was another bout of plague right before those tragedies as well. So, yeah. And because Measure, like, it was like he cranked it out. He did it. The only publishing of it was in folio version. So it wasn't like, oh, we're going to experiment and do all these different things. He just like bled it out onto the page. Blah.
Yeah. And just like we talked last play, when we were talking about how he could put certain words in King Lear's mouth that enabled him to make social commentary without getting beheaded himself. Measure for Measure is, I feel like he just was like, bleh! Like all this bad stuff is happening.
Yeah, and he just lets pretty much everybody have it, right? I mean, the Duke is some, nasty character, and he is the highest authority in the land, right? So that's really interesting. Yeah. So the biggest part in this play is Duke Vincentio, and he is a shifty motherfucker.
The Duke of Dark Corners.
Yes, that's what Lugio calls him. He does something that was a convention in Shakespeare's time for some of the sillier comedies, which is he goes into disguise as a friar. The Duke in disguise as a friar was like a common thing that they did in the various plays that happened at that time. But Shakespeare takes it to a crazy level, and he takes liberties with this shit. Because he's dressed as a friar, he decides that he can act as a friar. And he, you know, takes confession and stuff like that, which he is not authorized to do. Not at all.
Yeah, it's really wiggly. It's really icky. It's like it's a poke at religion, is it not? It is.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, too, if it's a very subtle, I can't be killed for this because Elizabeth is dead now, poke at Henry VIII. Because he confused church and state by opening the Church of England to serve his own ends. Right? So I was like,
interesting.
Now that Elizabeth is dead and James doesn't give a shit about Henry VIII, maybe he make a little bit of a jab at the Tudors, you know?
Interesting.
I mean, I haven't read that anywhere, but I was just, as I was reading the play, I was like, huh, could be. Shakespeare, you tricky little wiggler. Yeah, so this play this play was written in 1603. So King James is on the throne and Elizabeth is gone. And in Shakespeare's day, they had these things called the morality plays where, you know, the character of justice would come out and tell people some shit and tell people how to behave and all this. And so this is kind of Shakespeare's extreme version of a morality play and turned on its ass.
Right. There is no morality.
Not in this play. Not in this Vienna. So talk about the title, Measure for Measure. What does that mean?
Well, interesting. So from Matthew verse 7, line 2, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you.
Yeah. So it's like what you put out there is what you're going to get back kind of thing.
Yeah. And also, I also think it's, you know, the measure you use. So if I'm calling you a bawd, then someone's going to look at me to see if I'm a bawd, right? Like the measure taken of you will be taken of me, you know? And I think in this case, in this play, that that's the truth. And in our, soapbox, you know, in our politics now too, if I think something, right, and I pointed out that you're doing it, it's more often that I'm actually doing it rather than you're doing it.
Yeah. In the way that all people that we come across in our lives are mirrors for us, right, in some way.
Yeah.
Especially when we chafe at something, when we're upset with somebody about something, we got to look back at ourselves and go, why is that? Right? Yeah. So that's my little soapbox about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very Old Testament also in that whole eye for an eye thing, you know, because we will see at the end of the play that the Duke makes this judgment where one human being is easily interchangeable for another. And, you know, I punish this one in this way, and then I'm going to punish this one in this way. Boom. A Claudio for an Angelo.
But also...
tit for tat.
Tit for tit.
Tit for tit.
But also, Bloom says that he believes that both Angelo and Vincenzo are... Vincenzo, I'm never going to get his name right. You know that, right? Vincenzo, that both of them are sadists, and that Angelo, the tit for tat that he starts with is, I could torture the brother or I could defile the sister. Both are interesting to me. Both are exciting to me. They're sort of interchangeable in a way. Torturing the brother, defiling the sister, which is torturing the sister.
Yeah, so we're diving in. They don't even know what the story is yet.
Yeah. No.
What are you gonna say?
Right. Yeah, no. And I just, you know, I'm going to save it until we get more nunnery stuff going because there's some really interesting stuff about, you know, nuns.
Nuns. Yeah, so y'all have heard us say, like in Hamlet and stuff, that when you talk about a nunnery, you are also talking about
a whorehouse.
A whorehouse. So they are interchangeable. Nunnery, whorehouse, nun, whore. And Shakespeare is going to the extreme of that here too. So even though Isabella is wanting to be a nun, so many people in this play look at her as if she's a whore.
Yeah, well, she seems to have this bizarre effect on any man who meets her. And even though she maybe has struggled to maintain her chastity, I think that she's been pursued relentlessly. All she has to do is walk in her room and men are like, you know, so becoming a nun could be to escape the male gaze.
The attentions of men. Yeah. Because she wants to become a nun, not only just to become a nun, and we're going to talk about this more, but she wants the extreme version of that. We'll talk about the Order of St. Clair when we get to her scene. Yeah.
Right.
But today we are going to hit upon Claudio's first scene. And Claudio is Isabella's brother. And the way that he talks about her is highly sexualized language. It's crazy. Yep. So, and he says that this is the effect that she has on people. And later in the play, in a very key scene when she and he are talking together, she lobs the word incest into the middle of that conversation. And I don't think it's an accident. It's not something. And whether it's her perception of how their relationship was or her relationship with her father, whatever it is, she has that idea in her head that something went down. And that's, I think that's part of what she's trying to escape.
Yeah. One of the comments that I read, and I can't remember, it was not Harold Bloom. It was someone else that I was reading about this play, said that it made the assertion, which I disagree with, that Isabella equates all sexuality with incest. And I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true. No, because when she hears about Claudio getting his girlfriend pregnant, she's just like, well, they should just get married. You know, like she doesn't have a, oh my God, that's horrible reaction to it. Not at all. She's like very practical about it. So I disagree with that. Yeah, too. Yeah. So let's talk about Vienna. So this play takes place in Vienna, which is Austria, which, you know, is bizarre. Shakespeare never set another play there, right? Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of plays set in Italy, but never again Vienna. So Vienna is like foreign territory. You know, what do we know about Vienna? Let's see, Mozart.
Well, what would Shakespeare have known about Vienna?
Mozart, home of
crazy, lewd, creative geniuses.
I mean, yes. That's what Mozart would be, yeah. Yeah, so maybe he just sets it there so that he can say all these things. I mean, he often does that, right?
Yeah.
That's why he sets plays in Italy, because Italians are obviously carnal and debauched, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So obviously people in Vienna are also. Vienna is worse than Italy, in fact. So we start by hearing that this city is so corrupt. We hear this in the very first scene. It's so corrupt that even the person who is supposed to be the highest governing authority has no idea where to start to make it right. Or that's just his device for getting the fuck out of town. But he has allowed He has allowed it to get to a place that's so debauched that nobody wants to deal with it. So A, he's probably a horribly ineffective ruler. Right? He's like Prospero in that he's like, you know, gone into his library and jerked off and not paid any fucking attention to what the hell is going on in his city.
Yeah.
His laws are not clear, you know, or because everyone's getting around them. And so he just sucks at being a leader. So he has chosen a deputy, and he is basically going to abdicate his power to this dude, Angelo. And he says he chooses him because he's highly virtuous and that he is incorruptible and that he will take the city to a nice, clean new place.
For thee, not for me.
Yeah, right. You do it. I don't care. And then he goes into disguise as a friar, as we've said, in order to observe his city. So he says. So we'll see how that works out. We're not going to give it all away. And then the rest of the time, while he's gone, we get to meet all these other wonderful characters, which are all whores, pimps, drunkards, murderers, liars, fornicators. All the best kind of people, really.
All the best kind.
And I think Shakespeare loves those guys.
Yeah.
Shakespeare totally loves those kind of characters. He writes them so well. And they're like all of the denizens of Dante's hell. And Shakespeare would have been very much familiar with Dante's Inferno. Claudio actually even brings it up in his scene in the prison. Angelo refers to it. Isabella refers to it. So I think that he had this really in mind when he was writing this. Because it was a very vivid, very evocative description of what happened to people in hell. You know, it was really particular. And so I think he had those pictures in his head. And he's like, let's explore a place that's so bad that we can talk about all those different kinds of sins and really see, take them to the extreme.
Right.
So we have, you know, measure for measure, we've talked a lot about other plays about antithesis, things that are opposites being put against each other in order to make a point. I think this play is kind of the max example of antithesis from the start, right? We have whores and nuns, right?
No, I just think the Duke himself is an embodied antithesis.
Yeah.
You know, the Duke versus the friar. And even his, he besmirches the friar with his dukiness.
His dukiness, his shit that he rubs all over him. Yeah. Yeah. He corrupts religion just by standing in those clothes.
Yeah.
He does, right? Yeah. Some of the other themes are like, well, we talked about virtue versus sin, justice and iniquity, abuse of power, sexual violence, which we're going to explore. We're going to see what is the nature of that and can we get any clues from the text? Would be very interesting. Forgiveness and mercy. Who is allowed to receive mercy and who is worthy of forgiveness? And always, we always have things like appearance versus reality. That is always a theme almost in every Shakespeare play, you know, whether people are in disguise or whatever. So we do have disguise this time. It's not a pants role. It's not a woman in disguise as a man, which is interesting and different. And then we have the theme of marriage. And in Elizabethan times, there were certain steps that you had to take in order to get married. There were rules about it. It was very formalized, right? So Claudio is going to be a victim of being caught in the middle of that sequence because he didn't quite
get all the way,
follow all the rules, right? Yeah, he did things in the wrong order, shall we say. And so he's punished in the extreme. You're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to woo, right? And then you're supposed to declare in church, in front of everybody, that you have this intention, and then you get handfasted, which is in the presence of witnesses, you declare your love, and that's almost there. And then you have to have a dowry that is paid, and then you can actually get married.
Wait,
so,
when do the bands come?
I think the bands are like early. They're right after you, the permission from the parents, etc. Right?
Okay.
The community has to approve. Right, the bans are the chance for anyone in the community to object if they wanted to.
Okay.
And then they get handfasted. So Claudio and Giulietta, his wife or wife-to-be, were handfasted, but then they had sex. So they skipped to the end. And they didn't do those important later things. Angelo, when he is deputized, decides to pick this sin and punish it to the extreme, the fornication before marriage sin.
Which would have been shocking to people in Shakespeare's time because that was done all the time.
Yeah. Cases and cases and cases were brought up before the civil court and basically people would pay a fine and they'd go their merry way. So to condemn someone to death for this was like unheard of. Extreme,
it
horrible.
Would have been shocking. It would have been shocking in Shakespeare's time, just as it's shocking right now. And you know, because everybody in the audience would know people who had done that or had done it themselves. And if Juliet hadn't become pregnant, they may have gotten away with it.
Right. But, you know, that was too easy back then. There weren't all of the chemical abuses in our food, etc., that keep people from getting pregnant.
Yeah.
They just got pregnant all the time, had gazillions of babies. Most of them died. So we have two scenes for you today, and one of them has the madam and the pimp and one of our favorite characters, Lucio. Who's Lucio, Aaron?
Lucio is a friend of Claudio's, and I'm trying to remember what. Oh, he's a pimp. Isn't he a pimp?
He's a John. He frequents the whorehouses.
Got it.
Yeah.
He frequents the whore. Okay.
He's not a nobody. Like, he's Claudio, they call him Signor Claudio. So these are maybe merchant class sort of people. They're not nobility, mm-hmm. but they're not pimps and whores. Yeah. And right. Lucio they're and Claudio class. Are good friends. Yeah, middle class. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So what did Harold Bloom say about Lucio?
He said, Lucio is us. Lucio speaks for us.
I love that.
Speaks for Shakespeare. Lucio's the only non-corrupt person in the whole play, according to Harold Bloom.
Well, he's also extremely corrupt, but he's honest about it, right?
Right.
He just like lays it all out there. Yeah, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
He what you see is what you get.
Except for he has one little vulnerability, which is that he got a whore pregnant and she has a child. And so that's his one chink in his armor that he doesn't want to own up to. Because he's like, I don't want to be a fucking father. I no.
Right.
It's probably not even mine. No.
Right.
Right. And so that's the one thing that anybody could get him on.
Yeah. And they do.
Unfortunately. Claudio committed that same crime and he doesn't get away with it for a second. And right. Lucio committed it and he just knows how to get around the system. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those guys are an interesting contrast. Yeah.
Another antithesis. You've made a note about word frequency.
Yeah, that's fun. Word frequency, I just like these kind of things. So the most used verb in the play is come. Enough said, right? And the most used noun is will. And if you guys haven't heard us talk about this before, will is sexual energy, along with being like your intention. Your will is your sexual energy and or your penis or vagina. And then the Duke, we've all often talked about pronouns that the higher uppies use. And he uses the royal pronoun, the our things, we do this. But he also uses me. So it's interesting to see when he decides that he's just one of the guys or when he's pulling rank. Okay, mm-hmm. So watch for those two. All right, measure for measure. And the corrupt city of Vienna. So I am Duke Vincentio. And the play starts with a name. Aeschylus.
My lord.
Of government, the properties to unfold would seem in me to affect speech and discourse, since I am put to know that your own science exceeds in that the lists of all advice my strength can give you. Then no more remains but that to your sufficiency as your worth is able, and let them work. So he's like, I don't need to explain the law to you, because you are very well versed in the law. So go ahead. Do your job. Go for it. Yeah? As your worth is able. I know that you are worthy to do this job. So we don't know yet what the job is. The nature of our people, our city's institutions, and the terms for common justice, you're as pregnant in as art and practice hath enriched any that we remember.
Throwing pregnant right in there.
Yeah. Pregnant. Meaning knowledgeable here, but man. To lob that word in will be an interesting choice as we go forward. So he's like, you know all about the people that live in this town. You know about the institutions and the government and the laws. And I can't think of a better person to do this job. So then he hands him something. There is our commission, from which we would not have you warp. Warp is also an interesting word, right? It means to, when a board is warped, it's bent and it's not useful.
It pulls away. Yeah, pulls.
It means to deviate. Call hither, I say. Bid come before us, Angelo. What figure of us think you he will bear? So figure meaning representation. How is he going to represent me? For you must know, we have with special soul elected him our absence to supply. Lent him our terror, dressed him with our love, and given his deputation all the organs of our own power. What think you of it? So we have with special soul, with special consideration, we have chosen him, right? Elected him. Elected, great word, because dukes are not elected. He's going to use all my terror, right? Frighten people. He's going to love my people. And then we have the word deputation. He's going to be my deputy with all of the power that I can supply him with. What do you think?
And Aeschylus says, if any in Vienna be of worth to undergo such ample grace and honor, it is Lord Angelo.
Look where he comes. So he's got full support of Aeschylus, and here comes Angelo.
Always obedient to your grace's will, I come to know your pleasure.
Such amazing line-ending word for him there, right? Pleasure. That gives us a little insight into what he's all about. And also, Isabella says it to him later, right? I come to know your pleasure, she says in her second scene. And Vincentio cuts him off. Angelo, with his name, right? But he's also in a hurry. You'll see that they're going to be shared lines now. But that's really just because Vincentio is like, great, the deputy's here. I got to go.
Yeah.
Angelo, there is a kind of character in thy life that to the observer doth thy history fully unfold. Thyself and thy belongings are not thine own so proper as to waste thyself upon thy virtues, they on thee. Heaven doth with us as we with torches do, not light them for themselves. For if our virtues did not go forth of us, 'twere all alike as if we had them not. So he's like, you're the kind of guy that people can see exactly what you're made of right on your face, right? Just by observing you. And so what he has observed is that he has so many virtues that he has to put them to use, like heaven does with us, with all of us people, right? They give us these good things, these good qualities, not for us to just hide them away and make use of them only for ourselves. They are for the world. So he's saying, I'm going to take you and your virtues and put them to work. And he's going to elucidate that here. Spirits are not finely touched, but to fine issues. And spirits is an interesting word because it's also slang for semen.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you don't get good stuff unless you're meant to use it for good. Okay. Nor nature never lends the smallest scruple of her excellence, but like a thrifty goddess, she determines herself the glory of a creditor, both thanks and use. So Mother Nature gives us excellent things so that she can take credit for how great we are. Right. She gets the thanks and she gets your efforts. So in a way, the Duke is also equating himself with goddess here, you know, because like, I'm giving you this purpose. But I do bend my speech to one that can my part in him advertise. So I'm preaching to the choir because you're going to show exactly by your deeds what I'm saying. Hold, therefore, Angelo, in our remove be thou at full ourself. So you're going to be me. Mortality and mercy in Vienna live in thy tongue and heart. I love the alliteration, mortality and mercy. So death and mercy, you can decide which is which. Old Aeschylus, though first in question, is thy secondary. Take thy commission.
Now, good my lord.
Even though Aeschylus knew the plan first, he's going to be your second and do whatever you need him to do.
Now, good my lord, let there be some more test made of my mettle before so noble and so great a figure be stamped upon it.
Metal?
Character. Test me. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
Yes. And this great image at the end there, be stamped upon it. It's like the making of coins. So it's already bringing in the theme that money and politics are mixed in together here. Greed and payoffs and stuff. And Vincentio cuts him off again. No more evasion. We have with leavened and prepared choice proceeded to you. Therefore, take your honors. So I've carefully considered this. I don't want you, you know, don't tell me what to do. I have chosen you and you go. And then he brings in haste because he's like, I'm in a hurry. I gotta go. Our haste from hence is of so quick condition that it prefers itself and leaves unquestioned matters of needful value. My haste is so of such a quality that it is the most important thing. And I know that there will be things that you have questions about, but I can't spend any time on that. Great. So he's leaving them just with a half-assed plan and no answers.
Yeah.
And then he takes that royal fucking we back to put them in their place. We shall write to you as time and our concernings shall importune, how it goes with us, and do look to know what doth befall you here. So fare you well. To the hopeful execution do I leave you of your commissions. Yeah. Interesting word choice.
That's
execution.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah. And Angelo has a ship line with him.
Yeah, because he's like going out the door, right? Of your commissions. As time and our concernings shall importune. So as we are worried about your progress, we will get in touch with you. We'll give you some news about us too, you know.
Don't call us.
Yeah, pretty much. Off I go, and here's your commission.
Yet give me leave, my lord, that we may bring you something on the way.
Yeah, can't we even accompany you? My haste may not admit it, nor need you, on mine honor, have to do with any scruple. Your scope is as mine own, so to enforce or qualify the laws as your soul seems good. This word qualify is amazing, so which means modify or amend. So you can enforce the laws or maybe change them if you want to. Whatever, I don't care. Give me your hand. I'll privily away. I love the people, but do not like to stage me to their eyes. Though it do well, I do not relish well their loud applause and aves vehement, nor do I think the man of safe discretion that does affect it. Once more, fare you well.
I think he do like the aves vehement, and he do like their loud applause. If he didn't care for their caring for him, then he would enforce the laws. And you know, and I think he likes being popular.
Yeah, because he hasn't done things that would make him unpopular. He hasn't come down hard on them, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I do not like to stage me. I don't want to appear before them, you know. And then he says, I don't think that the guy who does love these things is trustworthy. So if he does love these things, he's just made a judgment about himself, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not trustworthy. He's telling you.
And that could be an interesting thing for the actor to play with.
Yeah.
If the reason he's going undercover is because he himself is not trustworthy and he's trying to learn how to be more so by not being the Duke anymore, it's an interesting thing to play with.
And then, as we've said in other plays, fare you well means I hope things go well for you. It's not goodbye, right?
Yeah, right. You're right.
Angelo and Aeschylus are kind of calling to him as he's going out the door. Okay.
Angelo, the heavens give safety to your purposes. Aeschylus, lead forth and bring you back in happiness.
I thank you. Fare you well. Off he goes. And Aeschylus and Angelo are left kind of going, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Aeschylus, I shall desire you, sir, to give me leave to have free speech with you, and it concerns me to look into the bottom of my place, a power I have, but of what strength and nature I am not yet instructed. And Angelo, 'tis so with me. Let us withdraw together, and we may soon our satisfaction have touching that point. And Aeschylus, I'll wait upon your honor.
Yeah, so they're both a little confused as to what exactly they're doing here, right? It would be really funny if you were doing a movie of this, if this was taking place in the lobby of a big building and they were in a revolving door. The Duke is like, meow, meow. That would be very funny. Yeah. I love this line when Aeschylus finishes with, I am not yet instructed. There's three beats of silence there. Mm. And it's almost like Angelo's like, I don't know what to tell you. You know?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't fill it in. It's just like, yeah, me too. All right. So they're off to figure out what the fuck is going on with them. And to read the Duke's commission and see if there's any information there. And we're going to go on to scene two, where we get to meet Lucio. And this first bit is not actually explained. So his first lines allude to the fact that they have been informed that the Duke has left to meet with a whole convocation of other dukes to decide whether they're going to go to war with the King of Hungary. So Austria and Hungary, you know, we're classically
Hatfield and boys.
Yes. All right. So that's what he's meaning in this first line.
Okay. Lucio. If the Duke with the other Dukes come not to composition with the King of Hungary, why then all the Dukes fall upon the King?
Yeah. Composition being agreement. So if they don't agree, then they're going to go against the King. First gentleman. Heaven grant us its peace, but not the King of Hungary's. Second gentleman. Amen.
Lucio, thou concludest like the sanctimonious pirate that went to sea with the Ten Commandments, but scraped one out of the table.
So, like, you're making a conditional statement, because the first gentleman said, heaven grant us peace, but not the King of Hungary peace. So we like peace, but if the King of Hungary doesn't get peace, it means we get to go to war. So he's making a weird conditional statement. And the second gentleman says, thou shalt not steal?
Lucio. Aye, that he raised.
Raised means?
Cut out.
Wiped it out. So he cut that commandment off the tables. And first gentleman, why, 'twas a commandment to command the captain and all the rest from their functions. They put forth to steal. So that commandment had to be cut out because that's their whole job is stealing. So they wouldn't be able to do their job if they had to take that commandment with them. So he's making comparison now to soldiers. There's not a soldier of us all that, in the thanksgiving before meat, do relish the petition well that prays for peace. So soldiers don't pray for peace in the same way that pirates don't say, I won't steal.
Right.
Right? Because otherwise they're not employed. Second gentleman, I never heard any soldier dislike it.
Lucio.
So he disagrees.
Yeah. I believe thee, for I think thou never wast where grace was said.
So clearly you don't sit at good tables and say nice things.
Right.
And second gentleman, no, a dozen times at least. First gentleman, what, in meter? So like in verse, like in church or in a book, or but not in real life?
Lucio, in any proportion or in any language.
First gentleman, I think, or in any religion.
Lucio, aye, why not? Grace is grace, despite of all controversy. As, for example, thou thyself art a wicked villain, despite of all grace.
So no matter what anybody says about it, grace is grace. Just like you're a rotten dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
First gentleman, well, there went but a pair of shears between us. Like, we're cut from the same cloth. You're every bit as shitty as I am.
Lucio, I grant. As there may between the lists and the velvet, thou art the list.
The list is like that fringy hem that's at the end of the velvet. That's the threads that the velvet was woven from. So he's saying that, yeah, we have to cut that shit away because that's not useful. You're the shitty, useless part, and I'm the velvet.
Yeah.
First gentleman, and thou the velvet? Thou art good velvet. Thou art a three-piled piece, I warrant thee. I had as lief be a list of an English kersey as be piled as thou art piled for a French velvet. Do I speak feelingly now? First gentleman's pretty pissed off. Pretty pissed off. So we got a couple different meanings here. Piles are also hemorrhoids, right? So he's like, yeah, your whole butthole is compacted because you're taking it up the ass all the time. That's one of them. Or piles is also like peeled. So he's like stripped of his fringe, like he's bald. And that was a side effect of the French disease or syphilis.
Wouldn't piles also be like pills on fabric like we get now, like the pills on a sweater?
Yeah, that could maybe be another one. Yeah. So you're not smooth. Yeah, you're not smooth.
Yeah. You're old.
Kersey is ready. Wool, so I'd rather be a good English something than you, you French baldy, no hair on your balls, dude. And I like, do I speak feelingly now? He's like, yeah, feel me, bro? Oh, yeah?
And Lucio, I think thou dost, and indeed, with most painful feeling of thy speech. I will, out of thine own confession, learn to begin thy health. But whilst I live, forget to drink after thee.
Most painful feeling of thy speech. He's saying, I think you're talking that way because that's what you are, right? I know you are, but what am I? That kind of thing. And so he's like, I will toast you, but I will not use that same glass and drink after you, lest I catch what you have, because you're the one with the French disease. And the first gentleman's like, shit, I think I have done myself wrong, have I not? The second gentleman, yes, that thou hast, whether thou art tainted or free. So now he's like, regardless of whether you have syphilis or not, we all think you do now.
Lucio, behold! Behold where Madam Mitigation comes. I've purchased as many diseases under her roofs as come to...
To what, I pray?
Judge.
Second gentleman. To $3,000 a year? First gentleman. Aye, and more.
Aren't dolors sadnesses?
Yeah. Sadnesses, but it's also... So you've gotten so many woes, so many ailments from... Madam Mitigation, who we're going to meet her in a second. She's the madam, because Lucio says, I've purchased as many diseases. I've gotten them because I paid for them, right? I paid for the whores that gave them to me. So he's making, the second gentleman's making a little pun, $3,000 a year. You've paid so much money and all you get is sick, my man. I and more.
Lucio, a French crown more.
So it's another allusion to that bald dick thing up above. First gentleman, thou art always figuring diseases in me, but thou art full of error. I am sound. So figuring is imagining. You're always imagining that I have disease, but I'm not. I'm healthy.
Lucio, nay, not as one would say healthy, but so sound as things that are hollow. Thy bones are hollow. Impiety has made a feast of thee.
Bones, it was said that that syphilis eats away your bones. So he's saying your bones are hollow because disease has bred in there. And your diseases have eaten you away. Enter Mistress Overdone, the madam of the hoe house. First gentleman. How now? Which of your hips has the most profound sciatica? He's just giving her shit, right? Well, well, there's one yonder arrested and carried to prison was worth 5,000 of you all. And she's like, ha, ha, funny. You guys suck. And the guy who just went to prison is way better. Second gentleman, who's that, I pray? Mistress. Marry, sir, that's Claudio. Signor Claudio? First gentleman. Claudio to prison? 'Tis not so. Mistress. Nay, but I know 'tis so. I saw him arrested, saw him carried away, and, which is more, within these 3 days, his head to be chopped off.
Lucio. But after all this fooling, I would not have it so. Art thou sure of this?
I am too sure of it, and it is forgetting Madame Julietta with child.
Believe me, this may be. He promised to meet me 2 hours since, and he was ever precise in promise-keeping.
Second gentleman. Besides, you know, it draws something near to the speech we had to such a purpose. First gentleman. But most of all, agreeing with the proclamation. There's been a proclamation about all the laws that are going to be enforced now. And so they've heard something about this. And that's why they're like, oh, shit. Yeah, they were serious when they read that paper.
Yeah. And Lucio, away. Let's go learn the truth of it.
And they leave Mistress Overdone on the stage alone. Ha! Thus, what with the war, what with the sweat, what with the gallows, and what with poverty, I am custom shrunk. The sweat is the plague. So she's like, man, my customer base has dwindled because of diseases and hangings and war and poverty. Enter Pompey Bum. How now? What's the news with you?
Pompey, yonder man is carried to prison.
Well, what has he done?
A woman.
But what's his offense?
Groping for trouts in a peculiar river.
So we've got one of those fish equals pussy references. What? Is there a maid with child by him?
No, but there's a woman with maid by him. You've not heard of the proclamation, have you?
Yeah, so he quick changed. He's like, somebody's pregnant. What proclamation, man?
All houses in the suburbs of Vienna must be plucked down.
Houses, he means whorehouses. And those kind of businesses were always located in the suburbs, you know, because they didn't want them in town. It would corrupt our town. So he's saying that all of the whorehouses are going to be closed and or destroyed. Mistress Overdone. Ah, and what shall become of those in the city?
They shall stand for seed. They had gone down too, but a wise burgher put in for them.
Mm-hmm. Stand for seed? Stay erect for fucking. So those dicks are going to still stand. Those dicks are going to still stand because a wise burgher, that means one of the town councilmen, probably a dude who frequented those whorehouses, were like, no, we're not going to close those. We're just going to close the ones out in the country.
Country.
Mistress Overdone. But shall all our houses of resort in the suburbs be pulled down?
To the ground, mistress.
Why, here's a change indeed in the Commonwealth. What shall become of me?
Oh, come, fear you not. Good counselors lack no clients. Though you change your place, you need not change your trade. I'll be your tapster still. Courage, there will be pity taken on you. You that have worn your eyes almost out in the service, you will be considered.
Tapster is a beer server, but here he means a pimp. He's a pimp. And I like worn your eyes out almost in the service. What the fuck does that mean? Your little sphincters?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Oh.
Eyes. We had that eyes theme in Lear, and now it's not the same at all.
No.
But he's like, your clients will probably follow you. Don't worry about it. They'll figure out where you are, mistress. What's to do here, Thomas Tapster? Let's withdraw.
Here comes Signor Claudio, led by the provost to prison. And there's Madame Juliet.
So Pompey and mistress run off because they see an officer of the law who is the provost, right? And he's leading Claudio to prison. And Juliet's following quietly, maybe weeping. Claudio. Fellow, why dost thou show me thus to the world? Bear me to prison where I'm committed.
Provost. I do it not in evil disposition, but from Lord Angelo by special charge.
Yeah, so he's like, why do you parade me through the streets? And Angelo wanted it that way. Thus can the demigod authority make us pay down for our offense by weight. The words of heaven, on whom it will, it will. On whom it will not, so. Yet still 'tis just. So there's that Bible verse that Aaron was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And then there's the juxtaposition of mercy and justice, right? He's like, okay, if this is what justice is, then this is what justice is. Lucio comes back to save the day.
Why, how now, Claudio? Whence comes this restraint?
From too much liberty, my Lucio, liberty. As surfeit is the father of much fast, so every scope by the immoderate use turns to restraint. Our natures do pursue, like rats that raven down their proper bane, a thirsty evil. And when we drink, we die. So he's comparing the eradicating of vice to poisoning of rats. So he's like, he's the rat in this scenario, right? I have gone after this thing that I think that I want. And in pursuing it, I find my death.
And Lucio. If I could speak so wisely under an arrest, I would send for certain of my creditors. And yet, to say the truth, I had as lief have the foppery of freedom as the morality of imprisonment. What's thy offense, Claudio?
Foppery? What's foppery?
It's like, you know, foppish is like dressed well and being kind of silly.
So, silly old freedom. I'd rather have silly old freedom than be moral and in prison. And so he's like, what the fuck did you do to get here? What but to speak of would offend again?
What is murder?
No.
Lechery?
Call it so.
And the provost, away, sir, you must go.
One word, good friend. Lucio, a word with you. So I think good friend means the provost. He's like, wait, wait, wait. And then he has to talk to Lucio.
And Lucio, 100, if they'll do you any good. Is lechery so looked after?
So looked after means punished. Thus stands it with me. Upon a true contract, I got possession of Julietta's bed. You know the lady. She is fast my wife, save that we do the denunciation lack of outward order. This we came not to, only for propagation of a dower remaining in the coffer of her friends, from whom we thought it meet to hide our love till time had made them for us. So here's that whole process of getting married, right? So she is fast my wife. She's hand-fasted. It's a legal contract. Oh, okay. So the bans come after the hand-fasting. Hand-fasting first, bans, because the denunciation is the ban. So we didn't do that part of outward order, meaning public process. We didn't actually take that step because, so we have the word propagation, which is continuing. It's like a planting reference, right? Of a dower. So like the keeping up of the dowry, which was not in their control because it was in the coffer, which is literally a strong box for keeping money, but it's also the control. It was in the control of some of her friends, and they weren't sure that those friends would not object to the wedding. So they wanted to make sure that they won them over to the idea, made them for us, like, you know, made them in favor of us before we said, oh, by the way, we're going to get married. So they did things in the wrong order.
Friends could also be family.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to gain their trust. They wanted to make sure that they were not going to say no. But in the process, they said, well, a little fucking wouldn't do any harm. And yes, in fact, it did. But it chances the stealth of our most mutual entertainment with character too gross is writ on Juliet. So our mutual entertainment, our secret fucking, is showing on Juliet. That means she's pregnant.
With child, perhaps.
Unhappily, even so. And the new deputy now for the Duke, whether it be the fault and glimpse of newness, or whether that the body public be a horse whereon the governor doth ride, who, newly in the seat, that it may know he can command, lets it straight feel the spur, whether the tyranny be in his place or in his eminence that fills it up, I stagger in. So he's like, I'm not sure if this is a fault of his, or it's just because he's got all this awesome new power that he just has to enforce it so hard. So he's making this horse taming metaphor, like give it the spurs, you know, like make it go to its full extent. I stagger and mean I'm perplexed by it. I don't know what the cause is for Angelo to be so crazy and strict with his power. But this new governor awakes me all the enrolled penalties, which have, like unscoured armor, hung by the wall so long that 19 zodiacs have gone round and none of them been worn. Awakes me, he renews all of the old laws that have been on the books that no one has bothered with for years, the enrolled penalties. And he's making this metaphor like they've been like old armor that just sits on the wall and gets rusty. For 19 zodiacs, which is 19 years, and nobody has paid any attention to them for 19 years. And for a name, now puts the drowsy and neglected act freshly on me. 'Tis surely for a name. So to make himself a name, he's pulled up this drowsy, this sleeping old law that is about if people fornicate before marriage, somebody will be put to death.
Right, and he's trying to make a name for himself by fully enforcing it to the nth degree.
Yeah, so he's like, if I punish this guy, then nobody else will do it, right? If I put this guy to death, everybody else is going to get in fucking line.
Right. Lucio, I warrant it is, and thy head stands so tickle on thy shoulders that a milkmaid, if she be in love, may sigh it off. Send after the Duke and appeal.
Tickle is precariously. So your head is not so sure on your shoulders right now. I have done so, but he's not to be found. I prithee, Lucio, do me this kind service. This day my sister should the cloister enter, and there receive her approbation. So this is amazing to me. This day, today, she should have been enrolled in the nunnery. And if it was, if they had done this, all this stuff tomorrow, there would be no help for it. She would have already been in there because the Order of St. Clair demands that women no longer speak to men. So she would no longer be able to speak to them, period. She would be unreachable. She was getting her approval, receiving her approbation to be a nun today. Acquaint her with the danger of my state. Implore her in my voice that she make friends to the strict deputy. Bid herself assay him. I have great hope in that, for in her youth there is a prone and speechless dialect, such as move men. Besides, she hath prosperous art when she will play with reason and discourse, and well she can persuade. Listen to this language. It's crazy.
Go talk to her for me. We've talked about the word friends being slang for lover.
And it's a line ending there, right? So even if it takes that, she needs to do this for me. So there's the hint of that already, right?
Yes.
Even if she has to sleep with him, she's got to get me out of this problem, this strict deputy. I don't see any other way around it, right? A say is to try your luck, but it also sounds like assault,
yeah,
right? Because in war language, an assay is an attack, okay? And then we have the word prone, which means she's prone to be persuasive, but she's also lying face down on the floor. Prone is like submissive, supplicating. And then we have speechless dialect, like her eyes say yes, even if her mouth says no.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So like men get the wrong idea from her all the time about her intentions,
yeah,
right? Such as move men. They get hard-ons just looking at her.
Yep.
And then he says she has prosperous art, which is art is like artifice or artfulness. That means there's a lying quality, a fakery quality about it, that she's like using her seduction qualities to do this on purpose. It's like sexual technique. And she can play with reason and discourse. She can twist words and make people think things that they don't want to think. This is why I think that Claudio and she have some deep shit going on. Because for him to say this stuff about his sister is just icky.
Yeah. But also, when we did this play, I never really thought about this piece. If everybody is speaking their truth, maybe Isabella, I played her as if she was an innocent in this whole thing, but maybe she's just not quite so innocent. He's known her longer than anybody else, and he says she can play with reason and discourse, and she can persuade.
So maybe she uses those things.
Maybe she's not a victim.
She doesn't speak like a victim. She's powerful.
Yeah, no, I know that. I mean, I understand that. But I think that, you know, I played her like she was powerful in her conviction of religiosity. But I'm thinking maybe it's more complex than that.
Yeah, maybe she needs it as protection from herself.
Yes. Anyway. Right? Not so much protection from men, but protection
shutting
from
her.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what I'm capable of.
Right. Men are gross, and I'm sorry to say that out loud. I don't mean all men. You know that. But there are, you know, this whole idea that women exist. Oops, soapbox. This whole idea that women exist to be the ultimate partner for a man, to be attractive to and serve men. And there's still a lot of that kind of misogynistic, patriarchal bullshit out there in modern day time. And I always took it as that she was trying to escape that. But it may be that she's used it to her own benefit when it suited her. And she's trying to not only protect herself from that which she has no control over, which is what the male gaze is on her, but also she's trying to protect herself from herself and her own manipulation of that male gaze to get what she has wanted in the past.
Mm.
I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah. We'll have to see when we get to her words and see, you know, how she uses have to look words. Again. All right. Well, she can persuade.
Lucio, I pray she may, as well for the encouragement of the like, which else would stand under grievous imposition, as for the enjoying of thy life, who I would be sorry should be thus foolishly lost at a game of tic-tac. I'll do her.
A game of tic-tac is like a game of backgammon, but it's so like it's so absurd to lose your life for just having sex. It's just crazy. So I hope she can persuade. And this is for the encouragement, the pardon of the like. That means other guys who've done the same thing, which is him.
Yes.
Which else would stand under grievous imposition, right? He's like, uh-oh, I'm next in this chopping block if I don't get her to do something quick. You know, so the stakes are high for him to make sure that Isabella gets what she wants. And also I hope he saves your life because I love you, man. Right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Claudio. I thank you, good friend Lucio.
Within 2 hours.
Come, officer, away. So don't worry. I'm going to find her. I'm going to get it done.
Yeah. Quickly. I'm going to do it quickly.
Yeah. All right. Got some good intro to some of these peoples. Okay, so Measure for Measure kicked off to a jolly good start.
Romping. Romping.
A romping, a rousing good start.
Ah, an erect good start.
Yes, a standing tall start.
There you go.
All right. Awesome. All right. So from jolly old England, I'm Diana.
I'm Erin.
And this has been a Thick Shakespeare.
Thick Shakespeare, but don't get caught.
Ah, yes. There we are. That's our sign-off for this play.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.